Welcome back to Centennial Conversations, a series of podcasts about the first 100 years of Gavilan College. I'm Doug Achterman, head librarian, and we're here with history instructor Leah Halpert, who just completed To Dream on Your Behalf, a history of Gavilan College. When Dana was last here, you talked about the 1940s, the war years, and the attendant challenges the college had in surviving low enrollment. The 50s were really boom years, both in terms of population and the economy, but these years at San Benito Junior College were turbulent. It survived three serious crises and then a fatal blow. It had a fatal blow. Can you talk about this?
Yes, and thank you for having me in general to talk about Gavilan history. So in the 50s, we had discussed last time that there was a fire which attacked the physical structure, and then Hartnell College down the road tried repeatedly to take over the college. I guess they wanted its tax base, and the college fought that off and continued to be San Benito Junior College, its own independent entity. And then in the late 50s, there was an accreditation failure, which, strikes at the very roots of what a college does. If you can't pass your accreditation, your students go away. And remarkably, the college overcame all three of these really serious threats. But number four was impossible to overcome. In the early 1960s, the state of California changed its funding formula and decided that it didn't want to support really small local colleges, just like San Benito College, and they wanted bigger districts with larger population bases. I guess they figured there were economies of scale and improvements they could have. So they let the college know that its spring 1963 semester would be its last, and that would be the last graduating class.
So what options did the college officials have?
They weren't great options. They could shut down, which people locally really didn't want, and then that would also mean insult to injury. This is what people in Hollister really hated. They'd have to pay to send their local students to another college like Hartnell, which by now was like the devil in San Benito County. You know, they mentioned Hartnell in the 1950s and 60s, and people's, you know, ears kind of curl. And, maybe MPC, et cetera. So nobody wanted to do that. It was more expensive than actually having a college. And it's anathema, you know, to send your students somewhere else. They could join Hartnell voluntarily. Need I explain that that was not a good option. So that never flew. And then actually, you know, there were some very far-sighted college officials since 1958 or so. They had kind of seen the handwriting on the wall. It was kind of like the Wild West in California. Community college districts would set themselves up. And then by the late 50s, it was kind of a situation where any town or city that wasn't part of a district, people were kind of looking to snap it up because it had tax revenues and it would increase the student population base. So the San Benito College officials were already kind of thinking maybe they could have a tri-county college with Watsonville and Gilroy. And then in 1959, Cabrillo College snapped up Watsonville. So all that was left was Gilroy. So this was really the only option, and they saw this. Ralph Schroeder said that if, you know, we're going to go this route, and that's what he wanted, to start a whole new district, that we had to have Gilroy. Morgan Hill could join or not, but we had to have Gilroy to do that.
So you mentioned Ralph Schroeder. He's sort of a larger-than-life figure in the history of the college. Can you say a little bit more about him? Who is he?
I just felt so honored to kind of get to know this remarkable person with quirks. He was a guy from Oakland. His grandfather, actually, Kent Child tells us, was a pretty important California Impressionist painter. So Ralph was somewhat artistic. Kent says he was a pretty good painter himself. He grew up in Oakland. He went to UC Berkeley. He majored in math and physics, got out in 1937 and taught in the Central Valley for a few years. And then he was mobilized. He spent 3.5 years in the Pacific Theater in World War II, which I tell you must have been a hell of a crucible. A lot of the early teachers and administrators actually were World War II vets, which I think might explain some of the toughness that they brought to the job of putting together a college. It wasn't easy, but it must have seemed easy then, you know, compared to what they had done. He married Catherine Hudner, who owned a fair amount of local ranch land in San Benito County, and they set themselves up on a cattle ranch, Hereford Cattle, 2,800 acres, huge cattle ranch. And that went on for about 4 years, and then he threw in the towel and came to teach at San Benito High School. He taught math in 1951. And as I guess he was there, he was also teaching at the college. He went on, earned a doctorate in, I think, college administration in 1961. So he was a brilliant, brilliant hand with money and finances. He was absolutely dedicated to the college. He was very good at figuring out kind of college structure. He was friendly to the arts. He was friendly to athletics and sports. He made very good hiring decisions. He was just the right person at the right time. And they actually hired him during the whole crisis where Hartnell was trying to take things over. And he came in punching. At the very first meeting, they had barely voted, okay, you know, he's going to become the director of the college. He said, I'm tired of a defeatist attitude, and I'm going to tell you I need money. If you want me to do this, I'm not going to accept, you know, second class. He read them the riot act, and they, you know, they handed the money over. For many years, the money from the state that was intended for the college had been used by the high school. And Ralph Schroeder knew this very well, and he told them, you're not going to do this anymore. And he was absolutely right. If there's going to be a college, they needed to fund it.
So who else besides Ralph Schroeder were the sort of key figures in this part of the history then?
What a cast of characters. There was a charter board for the new college, and I am going to kind of describe some of them. This is information that Kent Child actually personally had because he knew some of these people. They were pretty shrewd, salt-of-the-earth, well-educated guys for the most part. One woman, George Thomas, was a rancher. He served for many years. He kind of saw himself as the fiscal watchdog for the college. And he, in the early days, every warrant was reviewed by the board, and they had to pass a motion to pay the bills. He always voted no. No matter what the bills were, just as Kent says, George, just to be George, I guess he didn't want the college to spend any money because that's how he voted. So the other San Benito County trustees, by the way, they had three on a board of seven so that they and people in Hollister could feel that they still had kind of a controlling interest in the board, was Dr. Norman Curry, who is a physician, and Howard Harris, who was a geologist who lived on a ranch in Cienega Valley. Then from Gilroy was Ellis Bogle, and then the chair of the board, the charter chair, was Bruce Jacobs from Gilroy. And the Morgan Hill representatives were Dr. Wolfgang Titus and Bonnie Simonson, who was the only woman on the Board of Trustees in the 60s and 70s, though by no means the first. There were women on the boards, as far as I can tell, pretty much all along. So that's the board members, but they wisely, immediately set up a whole other kind of parallel structure that they all participated in. They put together four committees, advisory committees. One was on education, one was on building costs and finances, one was on promoting the bond measure that they had to have in order to fund all this, and one was on landscaping. Those were kind of their priorities. Mm-hmm. So they involved more than 50 members of the public, lots of people from all three communities, which is the laying the groundwork so that people can get to know each other and collaborate, I think. They didn't. I mean, these towns are silos, really. They don't communicate much. So the college was a way of bringing people together that was new and different. One last thing I want to say, I kind of made a reference to George Thomas and what a tightwad he was. He wouldn't approve any spending. But the whole board, I mean, Kent Child gave an example in 1967. The district found itself with some extra money. There had been a 5-cent tax on community services. So, you know, a prudent board would pocket that money and use it as a hedge against trouble later. But this board voted to give 1.5 cents back to the taxpayer so that they could, you know, they had this sense of responsibility for pennies and dollars, and it was the right thing to do, and that's what they would want as local ranchers and farmers, so that's what they did. They were very, very fiscally prudent.
that tension between the conservative rancher, salt of the earth character that you described, that I know well from San Benito County, having taught there for 20 years, is such. It's such an unusual place because there is this real strong progressive streak as well that comes from a real value for education and for. And for a social awareness. And so I just that tension has always been kind of an interesting thing to me about that county.
I think it's true. There has always been kind of a progressive group, and I'm pretty sure they were among the people who were the first officials of the college in the 1920s. But I also want to say, I have to say, after talking to some of these farmers and ranchers, dyed-in-the-wool conservative, you know, really kind of old-school conservative, they are committed to a college in their community. They really believe in it. They see the value of it. They talk about the time that they spent there. So it wasn't a hard sell somehow. And I can't really explain that because in other communities, people were not so supportive.
Mm-hmm. So what other challenges did they face then in trying to create a college in the early 1960s? What all went into doing that?
Well, the first issue was money. I mean, they got some money from the state, but they basically had to raise a lot of money. They knew that they needed a site, and they needed a site that everybody would be able to drive to, so it couldn't probably really be in San Benito County. It would need to be in very southern Santa Clara County because that would bring the Morgan Hill people. So that's going to take a lot of money. So they got a bond measure going. And in fact, it was a cause for much celebration when the bond measure went to the voters in March of 1964. They must have been jubilant because they needed 2/3 to pass and they got 84.9%, which is just a tidal wave of support. I mean, and again, you know, it's you look at that and you think, well, good for the people of California to see how important higher education is. So anyway, so the money was one thing. Then they had to find a site and keep the college going while the board frantically looked for a permanent site. And they chose the Hollister Naval Air Station, which is also commonly referred locally to as the Hollister Airport, a World War II installation that was a mess. There was asbestos, there was dust everywhere. It had been, you know, abandoned for a while. So they had to get in there and clean it up. And, you know, Bob Garcia tells a story about going in, hoping that he would get recruited and welcomed. And the two teachers he was looking for were barely able to talk to him or even look at him. They were busy hammering sheetrock and they were so covered with dust. You couldn't even, you know, you could see their lips and that was all. So they had to get money, get a temporary site, get a permanent site. The airport site was challenging. They had a lot of kind of issues about that.
So how did that site wind up working out?
Well, you know, there were classes in converted chicken coops. labs were a problem. You know, there weren't that many places with running water. PE was difficult. They had to bus students to the Bolado Park pool if they were going to take a swimming class. So it was not ideal. I mean, it was an old building. It was rickety. Actually, a number of the faculty who were hired to staff the new Gavilan College at the Hollister Airport within 10 years had died of cancer. So there's kind of a dark murmur. Some of them thought that maybe it was because of exposures in that building. Who knows? Or in those buildings. So it was challenging. But what's really important about this move is that they went from 180 students, which they had carefully built up on the Nash Road site in Hollister before they had to shut their doors and move over to the airport as the new Gavilan College. They had about 180 this semester before, and then they college officials described it as an enrollment stampede. They gained 50 students the first semester. By the second semester, they were up past 600 because they had a night program. So it was clearly drawing students from Gilroy and Morgan Hill, and more people from San Benito County were starting to come. It started to kind of snowball in a successful way, and that must have just felt wonderful to these people who had dealt with crisis after crisis. It's working.
So that really reaffirmed that need for a new site. I'm really surprised that the enrollment went up that much just from moving, because the airport's not that far from the high school site, right? And so what there, can you explain that in some other ways, or is that?
They couldn't explain it. They were surprised too. Mm-hmm. They were delighted, but it seems maybe that it was just the juju of having a new thing, and everybody wanted to come and check out this new college, and it had a new name, and they, you know, they were shrewd. They had done a fair amount of publicity. This is all covered in the local papers as the college is trying to twist and turn and figure out how it can survive. And I guess a lot of Gilroy Morgan Hill students didn't want to drive to San Jose, which I can relate to.
Yeah. All right, so you've got a we're operating in a temporary location at the airport, and we're raising money for this bond. What other kinds of challenges did they face in trying to get this new college up and running?
Well, the faculty were extremely overworked. People.
Gee, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, well, yes. But imagine the day that you're spending now and then going and doing, you know, 4 or 5 hours of hammering and sheetrock and, you know, ripping things down. I mean, they were exhausted. But I suspect, just from kind of what I've read, that there was also an exhilaration to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, everybody loves starting something new. The CSUMB founding faculty felt like they had a purpose in life. They were going to leave this legacy. And I suspect people felt like that. But there were also a lot of complaints about pay, about hours. You know, it was arduous for the people involved, the faculty. Although one kind of credit to the Board of Trustees is that they were so busy doing the whole other piece that we're going to talk about eventually, you know, finding the new site, raising the money for it, that they kind of had to just let the faculty run the college. And the faculty did so very effectively and very efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Trustees knew they could trust this faculty to keep things going. And that's what happened. For 3 or 4 years, it was pretty much the faculty running the show. And then one other challenge I wanted to mention is that they didn't know what to call it. That was a big issue.
I was wondering how did Gavilan get its name?
They had a contest.
Huh.
They couldn't call it San Benito Junior College because mm-hmm. they've got people from Gilroy and Morgan Hill, and you know they need to project this kind of two county image. So they had a contest. They offered a $25 prize. They got a lot of entries, and there's a funny story. Actually, 4 people suggested some variation of Gavilan. Some of them spelled it with a B and so forth, but they all mm-hmm. basically said Gavilan College. The runner-up was Loma Prieta. Mm-hmm. It almost became Loma Prieta College. Mm-hmm. And the 4 who won, Ruth Mary Winter, who's Muriel Winter Brehm's sister, was one of the 4 who had suggested Gavilan College, and her sister tells a story, we laughed, that they sent her a check for $6.25. They were so cheap that they divided the $25 prize. They wouldn't even, you know, spring for another $75 to give everybody the prize. So she cashed it, and then she was sorry. She should have framed it as proof that, you know, these people can't even pay a basic debt. So anyway, there were a lot of those, a lot of growth pains and a lot of decisions to make. And, you know, people who went to the airport and graduated from the airport felt proud that they were starting this new college. But it was also not the best environment to go to college in. It was...
So, but it had expanded enormously, right? So it went from like 4 times enrollment. And so that must have changed what was possible in terms of course offerings, programs available. Was there expansion in those kinds of things? And how did the sort of the offerings change and what was possible?
It was an exciting time. They tried real estate. They tried kind of some horticultural things like pruning. Those didn't really make it, but they also tried 2 things that did. They got a big grant for cosmetology, and they installed some basic equipment at the airport. And they also, I'm not sure if they had any kind of police training before this, but it certainly expanded. And that, too, has endured and become a major California State Police Academy. So, yeah, they're trying a lot of things. And at that point, vocational training is still really important. It hasn't kind of fallen on the harder times it's going to see in the 80s and 90s. And a lot of students come for those things.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea that the cosmetology program started that early, and the police academy as well. Those are kind of bedrock programs for the college. How about sports?
They had sports. Bobby Garcia kind of tells this story. There have been sports all along. Now, were they very successful? They were successful in terms of involving especially males, not that many options for women until the 70s. Bobby Garcia was 24, and he was home from the service. He had spent a couple of years in Germany. He was a man. And he played on local teams, and he was working, and he was recruited by some guys who were playing for Jerry Fluck. And they wanted him to play basketball, baseball. He could play any sport. So he went in to kind of check the whole thing out. And there are these two guys, Bud Ottmar and Jerry Fluck, and they're covered in dust and they're struggling to put up the sheetrock. And they barely paid him any heed, you know. And he was like, "Whoa, this is my recruitment to Gavilan." But he had a young woman who he was very interested in, who was coming here. So he did come here, and it's hilarious. I mean, he said they played offense and defense both because the football team his first year had 17 guys.
Yeah.
So he named all the positions he played. He played quarterback. He played linebacker. He played running. I mean, he played everything. And then he woke up very sore every Sunday. But he loved, he said it was about the camaraderie. They didn't win any games his first year. They won two his second year. He learned on the basketball court, he was celebrated for years because he had more points in one game, 18 points. And it's because he could steal and do layups. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a small guy, so it wasn't like he was shooting from far off the court. Yeah. So anyway, there was a sports program. It was not a competitive program in terms of beating other colleges.
So how did the students feel about this new college?
You know, from what I've heard, they were very excited. I talked to Cheryl Rosati Bernardo, who was the president of the Women's Students Organization, and she just had the best experience. It was so exciting to have teachers who were really passionate and they were focused just on this one subject that they taught. And apparently a number of the professors collaborated so that they had kind of common themes, and you were learning about something in one class and then it was kind of underlined in another class, and then in a third class there'd be a field trip to look at the art that had to do it. So she just felt like she got this explosive new understanding of the world that she had never had before, and that suddenly all these things started to connect and excite her about learning. And she had a wonderful experience. Her teachers were really on top of it, and she became an English major and a teacher. And I think the college had a lot to do with that. Another student from this era who I talked to several actually, but this was John Perez, who's a local dentist and who later became a Gavilan Board of Trustees member, and his wife Rachel Perez is now our Board of Trustees president. He was a very good high school student, and he had a unique experience at Gilroy High. He was part of a Mexican-American youth organization that one of the teachers, Concha Barrosi, had organized. So he was quite politicized by the time he came to Gavilan, and he found it to be politically kind of a vacuum, but the classes were so much harder that that was okay because he had no time, you know, like he had had in high school. The other thing that he noted, a couple other people noted this too, you know, college really was for the middle class at that point, but he and other students from very poor backgrounds were determined, but he had no car. You know, the airport kind of assumes that you have a way to get there. There was a bus, so he rode the bus, but the schedule was so infrequent that he spent a lot of time in the library, and his grades, he was a good student anyway, but his grades went up, 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 up because he was studying so much. But, you know, it kind of cramped his style. He couldn't date until college, you know, his 4-year college. He didn't have a car, so he couldn't do that. So he, too, though, says that he was exposed really for the first time to people who are passionate about what they were teaching. They organized a series of debates that he was helping organize between a teacher and a student on one side and a teacher and a student on the other side of a number of issues. And it was so exciting to engage with teachers and to question them in public about the position they were taking. So it was intellectually, apparently, it was a really wonderful time. And there was a lot of social activity going on also at the Hollister Airport site, for example. Nikki DeQuinn's mother, Barbara Goodrich DeQuinn, tells about being one of the few women in the Bombardiers Club. They actually flew and threw fake bombs at targets.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is and women were part of the club, and she flew with them, and she was part of the crew. And I mean, things that we wouldn't really associate with college, they were exploring and open to. I mean, it sounded like a wonderful environment in a lot of ways.
That sounds like a lot more fun than beer pong.
Yes. Yes, and don't mix the two, please. Anyway, I think the college at the airport was such a success that people were able to just kind of relax and say, okay, this is going to go. Now let's just work out the details.
We really are a college.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh,